produced and distributed by the National Organization for the Reform of Marijuana Laws in Washington, D.C., this is your normal daily audio stash, The Growing Truth About Cannabis. Welcome to the most popular podcast regarding marijuana in all of America and all the world, featuring interviews with scientists, politicians, doctors, prohibition policy activists, regular cannabis consumers, musicians, artists, and Normal staff and Normal's board of directors, along with music and comedy no other podcast can offer. You can always find out more about the show at our website, stash.normal.org, and continue the education and conversation on our blog as well. We're ending marijuana prohibition with education, one listener at a time. The podcasting and blogging technology for the Normal Daily Audio Stash is provided by Red Aphid Interactive Media. Visit www.redaphid.com. It's Friday, March 21st, and it's 4:20 somewhere in the world. I'm your host, Radical Russ Belville, and this is your Normal Daily Audio Stash. You can always follow up on any of the stories we cover here on the Daily Audio Stash by visiting the Stash blog at stash.normal.org. We'll have links to the complete news stories, links to the websites of the people we interview, and links and downloads of all the music we play. Plus, you can comment and communicate with other fans of the Stash by leaving your opinions in our comments section. It's the news, it's the music, it's the interviews by, for, and about the cannabis community at the blog that only Normal can deliver, your Stash blog at stash.normal.org. Friday is Cannabis Community Day here on the Stash, and coming up after the news, we're speaking with our good friend Steve Bloom from CelebStoner.com. We'll discuss Don Wells, Marianne from Gilligan's Island, who got busted in Idaho, and stuntman and Jackass star Steve-O's battles with addiction. Next, I've got some exclusive music from the original frontman of the Cottonmouth Kings, Sane Dog, and his new group, DGAF. Their new album was released this Tuesday, and we've got a slammin' new track called Knuckle Up. Then we wrap things up with Melody Silverwolf, a founder and board member of Oregon Normal right here in Portland, Oregon. Miss Silverwolf also works as a patient care coordinator at the state's largest medical marijuana clinic, and we discuss the efforts by medical marijuana opponents to repeal the highly successful program in Oregon. So sit back and relax with your favorite strain and enjoy your Daily Audio Stash. Now it's time to take a look at the latest stories about marijuana from news organizations across America and around the world in our Normal Daily Audio Stash, Hemp Headlines. And now an update on the case of Dr. Molly Fry and Dale Schaefer, who were sentenced to 5 years each in prison. An El Dorado County couple, a physician and an attorney, were sentenced Wednesday in Sacramento Federal Court to 5 years in prison for conspiring to grow and distribute marijuana. U.S. District Judge Frank C. Damrell, Jr. said federal law left him with no choice but to impose on both Dr. Marianne Molly Fry and attorney Dale Schaefer the mandatory minimum sentence. But to the delight of supporters who packed the courtroom, the judge allowed the pair to remain free on bail until their appeals have been decided. The statutory minimum applied because the number of plants, at least 100, found by a jury in August to be the crux of a conspiracy to grow and distribute pot from their offices in Cool and their home in Greenwood. Were it left up to him, the judge said, the punishment would be less. Quote, "It is a sad day, a terrible day," he said. At the conclusion of a grueling emotional hearing, Damrell ruled the couple could remain free on $25,000 bail, each pending the outcome of their appeals. Well, the mandatory minimum sentencing involved here, it always has seemed to me to be against the intent of the framers of our Constitution. They wanted a government with checks and balances. Congress makes the laws, but the president can check that with a veto. Presidents can sign laws, but courts can check that against constitutionality. But to take away the discretion of a judge to impose a sentence that he or she feels is appropriate to the facts and circumstances of the case, and instead vest that authority in the statutes passed by Congress and signed by the president, makes the judge merely a rubber stamp for the judgment-free minimums passed by a Congress trying to appear tough on crime. Visit Families Against Mandatory Minimums at famm.org for more information. But there is one last check, the jury. Juries have the right of nullification. They can check any bad law by simply refusing to convict, regardless of the facts, evidence, or circumstances. A jury can simply say, "We refuse to convict this couple because the law itself is unjust," even if they were caught growing a billion marijuana plants. You can learn more about jury nullification at the Fully Informed Jury Association at fija.org. Oregon Drug-Free Workplace Group spreads medical marijuana falsehoods. From the News Review in Oregon. Wilbur, Oregon. Employers and workers who intervene in a co-worker's substance abuse are the only ones who will stem the rising rate of workplace drug and alcohol abuse, said Dan Harmon, chairman of the Drug-Free Workplace Legislative Workgroup. Annually, substance abuse costs Oregon $5.9 billion. And then there's the loss of productivity in the state, amounting to $4.5 billion in lost earnings. The costs Harmon cited come from an Econ Northwest study. Well, I tried to find that report based on the newspaper article. I was not able to find it through any searches at the Econ Northwest website or Google, and the newspaper article makes no link to the study, so I can't comment to the accuracy of those numbers. But most of the time, when opponents are citing these substance abuse costs and loss of productivity, they're really just ginning up the numbers by conflating the abuse of drugs like cocaine and methamphetamine, which do create huge costs, with the popularity of marijuana, which creates the large numbers of drug abusers needed to scare the public. Another common tactic in these news stories is often to try to scare people with the crime attributable to hard drug abuse while pointing out how popular marijuana is, and this article is no different. It continues by saying, Oregon ranks among the highest in the nation in categories such as binge drinking, heavy alcohol use, substance abuse in the workplace, fatalities and injuries in the workplace, and positive testing for drugs, Harmon said. Marijuana use among adults in the state is at 6%, 50% higher than the nation. In 2005, Oregon ranked 7th in the nation for methamphetamine abuse, and that same year, Oregon ranked 4th in the nation for prescription drug abuse. Over 50% of property crimes in the state are linked to substance abuse. Oregon contends with the impact of medical marijuana use and growth across the state. Originally designed for the seriously ill, Harmon said Oregon's Medical Marijuana Act has now allowed 16,000 people, many of whom are in the workplace, to become cardholders for medical marijuana. Legislative changes now allow those who suffer from severe pain, not just chronic pain, to apply for a card, Harmon said. Only 451 of those cardholders are cancer patients, Econ Northwest has found. Now see, this is a common tactic that we're seeing by the drug warriors here in Oregon. The canard that medical marijuana was intended only for people that are in the last stages of dying from cancer or AIDS, and that somehow 16,000 people with medical marijuana cards is some sort of abuse. Well, if someone can use medical marijuana to alleviate their conditions enough to be able to work, doesn't that increase productivity in the workplace? Does Harmon think 16,000 unemployable medical marijuana patients would somehow help productivity? While only 451 of Oregon's patients list cancer as their qualifying condition, Oregon's Cancer Registry database shows that over 17,000 Oregonians could qualify for medical marijuana for their cancer diagnosis alone. And Harmon's claim about severe pain versus chronic pain is patently false. The Oregon Medical Marijuana Act was last amended in 2005. It added Alzheimer's agitation to the list of qualifying conditions, but the original Measure 67 that passed in 1998 listed among its qualifying conditions severe pain. It has never been listed as chronic pain, therefore there could not be any change in the listing. But Harmon seems to think that Oregon's law could be more restrictive like in other medical marijuana states. Quoting from the article, In comparison, if Oregon's medical marijuana law was written like Colorado's, limiting prescription cards to only the truly debilitated, there would be fewer than 1,500 cardholders in the state, Harmon said, and that would eliminate the need for employers to accommodate cardholders. Now, I find that very funny because Colorado's medical marijuana law was modeled on the template of the Oregon law. In fact, when we look at the original measure, Colorado's Measure 20, it states that medical marijuana can be used for, quote, severe pain. And the rest of the conditions listed are darn near a word-for-word copy of Oregon's list of conditions. If it were a work of fiction, Colorado's act would be guilty of plagiarism. This is a continued assault on Oregon's incredibly successful medical marijuana program. This is a continued assault on Oregon's incredibly successful medical marijuana program. Opponents want the law repealed or severely curtailed due to fears about the conflict over federal drug-free workplace laws and Oregon's program. To justify these changes, opponents like to stoke fears about the incidence of workplace accidents and fatalities allegedly due to substance abuse. However, workplace and accident fatality data in Oregon tell a different story. Since the implementation of 1998's Medical Marijuana Act in 1999, workplace fatalities dropped from 55 to 47. Non-fatal injuries with no workday loss dropped from 3.5 to 2.4 per 100,000, and lost workday injuries dropped from 3.5 to 2.8 per 100,000. In my opinion, the true reason for the workplace opposition to medical marijuana is simple. It undermines the regime of drug testing. For if you are a non-patient marijuana user, working side by side with a known medical marijuana patient who proves to be a reliable, safe, and productive worker, how then does industry justify testing your urine for marijuana metabolites under the claims that it will make you unreliable, unsafe, and unproductive? And once the testing for marijuana is undermined, the testing for all illicit substances falls because there are not enough employable users of harder drugs to justify the costs of and profit from the drug testing. High Times publisher and Normal founder mount legal challenge to Massachusetts pot laws. From the Normal blog. On Saturday, September 15, 2007, Normal founder Keith Strop and High Times associate publisher Rick Cusick were arrested for smoking a joint at the 18th annual Boston Freedom Rally on the Boston Common. This is an event held each year to protest the continued arrest of responsible cannabis consumers in that state, and depending on the weather, it attracts 15,000 to 50,000 supporters on the common. Keith and Rick have candidly acknowledged that they were sharing a joint, but they have pleaded not guilty and announced their intentions to challenge the constitutionality of the Massachusetts marijuana laws and to argue for a jury instruction informing the jurors of their common law power to refuse to convict an individual if they do not believe the offense should be a criminal matter. This long-held power of jurors is generally called jury nullification. Keith and Rick are some of the very few people in this country who have nothing to fear from the government, as their livelihoods are not affected by the publicizing of their marijuana use. To them, the potential of 6 months in jail is well worth the prospect of potentially changing the law and setting good precedent at the appellate level. They are represented by an all-star legal team, including famous Harvard law professor Charlie Nessen, who represented Daniel Ellsberg in the famous Pentagon Papers case during Watergate. There were nearly 830,000 Americans arrested on marijuana charges last year, and more than 88% of those were for personal use. In Massachusetts, there were more than 8,900 marijuana arrests last year, with more than 7,300 for personal use. It's time we stopped treating responsible cannabis consumers like criminals. Please consider making a generous contribution to help us cover the necessary costs of bringing this legal challenge to Massachusetts marijuana laws. We must have the courage to stand up and demand our rights. Check the story at the Stash blog at stash.normal.org, where you'll find the links to help make a contribution.
Hi. Hi, this is Willie Nelson from Normal. For 30 years, Normal has provided a voice for the millions of Americans who smoke marijuana responsibly. More than 500,000 Americans are arrested each year for smoking pot. These are ordinary citizens like you and me whose lives and careers are being needlessly destroyed. To learn how you can help, contact Normal at www.norml.org or call toll-free at 888-67-NORML.
All right. Well, once again, it's Friday here at the Stash, and like we do during Cannabis Community Day, we like to see what's going on in the world of celebrities and entertainment with respect to marijuana and cannabis. And there's no better person to turn to than Steve Bloom, the webmaster of CelebStoner.com. Steve, welcome back to the Stash.
Hey there, Russ. Nice to be back.
Hey, we had a whole lot of celebrity items that happened, and one that happened last week that we didn't get a chance to talk about, which was from my home state, where Don Wells, who played Marianne on the Gilligan's Island TV show, was caught in Driggs, Idaho. And let's tell everybody what went down and what's happened since then.
Well, first of all, she was arrested for marijuana possession back in November, and the media kind of got it a little bit wrong. You know, they reported that she had just been arrested, and they reported that she spent time in jail. All kinds of sort of inaccurate information. You know, what happened with her is she says that she was not smoking, that she picked up hitchhikers, they had marijuana in the car. Who knows? She could be making up a big story. But as it turns out, she was arrested back in November, and then she was sentenced, you know, just last week. So the sentence was a five-day sentence, which was dismissed, or she never did a sentence. The media kind of got it all wrong. I thought the coverage of the story was a little really odd, and to the point where, you know, she put out, or you know, and her lawyer put out like a statement regarding their arrest that she was. This was very humiliating and embarrassing for Ms. Wells. She wished to apologize to her friends and supporters for any embarrassment. But the embarrassment wasn't so much that, you know, that this occurred, but that the media had said things that wasn't really true. She didn't spend any time in jail. You know, she was given the sentence, but then the sentence was waived. You know, she is 59 years old. But nevertheless, you know, she was caught with marijuana, and she was charged, and she was sentenced, and you know, it's kind of a small story that was kind of blown out of proportion. I guess anything that happens with Gilligan's Island gets a lot of attention just because of the, you know, the pop culture nature of that show. And also Bob Denver, who was on the show, also had been arrested a few years ago. Denver has since passed away, but he was arrested for marijuana at a, you know, a sort of a senior age as well. So between Dawn and Bob Denver, you know, it's kind of interesting how the characters, you know, sort of lived up to their stony reputation.
Well, not a whole lot to do on the island, so.
I suppose they were smoking out.
I guess they were.
You have to go back to that show and remember whether they ever had any, you know, kind of themes around marijuana.
Now, this week, of course, we've got even more news happening here on the celebrity front. All sorts of celebrities, rappers and actors and jackasses a galore. So why don't I let you just go through the rundown on that for our latest celebrity cannabis encounters?
I've been focusing quite a bit on Steve-O. You mentioned Jackass. Steve-O is one of our top celeb stoners. You know, a lot of the people out there know him primarily from his, you know, work in the TV shows Jackass, and he's and the movies based around the TV show Jackass, and he's a stunt artist essentially. He does stunts. Everybody probably knows he does all kinds of crazy things. Most recently, he was arrested for vandalism within his apartment, and also for cocaine possession. And the vandalism was kind of odd. It was interesting about Steve-O is that he films pretty much everything he does. He's got a little film crew that kind of follows him around, and they post it on YouTube. And so he posted, I mean, very upfront, I mean, posted a video clip of him bashing through the wall of his apartment with just the broom handle. He didn't, like, you know, a huge hole, but a hole the size of a broom handle poked through into the apartment of his neighbor. Why, I don't know. But, you know, Steve-O probably was causing problems there, and as it turns out, he had an eviction notice. And I actually had been to that apartment. Apparently, during the time that since I was there, which was around January of 07, until now, you know, he's kind of had some problems with his neighbors to the extent that he was evicted. So before he was being evicted, he decided to kind of trash his apartment. His friends, Johnny Knoxville, who's, you know, kind of like the main star of Jackass, and then a bunch of other guys came and kind of more or less did an intervention on him, but they didn't basically say, hey, you're in trouble, you got problems, you know, we want to help you. They basically corralled him and took him to the hospital.
Hmm.
They brought him to Cedars-Sinai Hospital, L.A., and basically institutionalized him.
Yeah.
So he is still in the hospital. And so we've been following what's been going on with Steve-O. It's kind of personal for me because I know him. I met him when I was with High Times, and we had photographed him about 4 or 5 years ago. Then I met him more recently when I was working on my book. And you know, I'm kind of concerned, actually, you know, how is he doing? So you can find that everything you want to know about Steve-O pretty much if you just go to his MySpace page, because he's pretty much laying it out. See, about a year ago or more, maybe a year and a half ago, he had made this grand statement saying, I'm no longer going to do all these hard drugs. I'm just a pothead now. And I think that was his wishful plan, which was to get away from the hard drugs, clean up his life then. And that was a year and a half ago, and I think he was trying. But, you know, here is this guy who lives this kind of crazy lifestyle. And you can imagine people probably expect him to act crazy, do crazy things, you know, jump off of things, hurt himself, bounce back, drink 5 beers, you know, do crazy stuff, you know, in succession,
mm-hmm.
you know, snort a lot of stuff, whatever it is, smoke, everything in excess.
Yeah.
You know, so I think, you know, he's got to tone it down, but hopefully, you know, I hope for him he doesn't pull the marijuana component out of the equation, because I think it will be helpful for him. Take everything else away, but keep smoking pot.
I remember the late comedian Sam Kinison once had a routine where he talked about that, where he said when you're a celebrity, everybody thinks you're somehow Superman. You know, they'd be tapping out regular size lines for everyone else, and when we see Sam, they're like, oh, it's Sam Kinison, and they want to be, they want to impress him by, you know, giving him more, you know, much bigger line than he'd be giving, you know, anyone else at the party. So yeah, there's definitely something to be said
for
that.
I agree with you 100% on that, and even more because I've been around, you know, a lot of people in rock and roll and hip-hop, and they're larger-than-life people who are around so many people who, you know, if they are lead the lifestyle that involves using drugs, you know, people always want to do it with you. People want, you know, you're doing more than the average person by far. And, you know, also, you know, maybe you need a little bit more for whatever your reason, but, you know, but you do a lot more than you probably should. And because, you know, and then somewhere along the way, you know, something bad happens, and, you know, sometimes, you know, you don't survive. I mean, I was friends with Shannon Hoon from Blind Melon back in the early 90s, and it was just, you know, one of the saddest days of my life when I heard that he had passed away, and here was a guy who just overdid it.
Well, it's that ease of access. You know, you've got people around you that are willing to supply you and take a kind of a badge of honor to do it. You know, like, I'm the guy that got the drug for so-and-so. That's their brush with greatness, so to speak.
Right.
Now, before we go, we should definitely talk about your book, because I've been looking forward to this coming out. You know, we get a lot of books about the science of marijuana or medical marijuana or the engineering uses of hemp, whatever. But I always like the books that take a look at the culture. I see us as a very definable subculture, the largest invisible minority in the country. So let's tell everyone about your book and how they can get a hold of it and what it's all about.
Well, Pot Culture, The A to Z Guide to Stoner Language and Life, co-written with Shirley Halpern, my good friend. It's an A to Z book, so it is like A to Z about marijuana, kind of in a dictionary encyclopedia style. So the first, like, two-thirds, the bulk of the book, let's say at least two-thirds of the book is devoted to about 500-plus words, people, places, things, slang terms associated with marijuana. Plus, within the A to Z, we have what we call sidebars and spreads on a variety of subjects. It'd be a guide to grinders, or the anatomy of a bong, or you know, one hitters, or you know, and you'll have little sidebars, and we'll show you like 5 different one hitters and do like little reviews, and then within the A to Z, we have a lot of celebrity interviews or celebrity pieces like Rob Thomas from Matchbox 20 writes a little piece on how to kind of tell somebody's a stoner, or Adam Levine from Maroon 5 writes about, you know, his favorite songs to, you know, kind of listen to when he's stoned. These are songs that kind of influenced him, and you get an insight into, like, what he likes. And we have a lot of things. Redman has how to, you know, we do a two-page spread on how to roll a blunt based on the song that Redman had had written back in the 90s, and so it's now a pictorial version of that song, so to speak. Or we have Steve-O, you know, doing a one-page showing people how to make a pipe out of a can. Or we have Jonah Hill from Superbad, you know, showing people how to make a pipe out of an apple. So it's a lot of, like, fun stuff like that throughout the book. And then the latter section of the book is a guide to music, movies, television, travel, and assorted other subjects.
Well, it sounds like it's an exhaustive compendium, and if I may borrow a phrase from Ed McMahon, everything you want to know about marijuana can be found in that book.
Gosh, we tried. I mean, it was one of those types of books where you wake up, while we were writing, you wake up in the middle of the night and you think of something, and you know, and you add it to the list to make sure that you didn't miss it.
Yeah. Well, where can people pick up a copy of the book, and what's it going to run?
Well, the book's coming out on April 20th.
Well, of course.
Appropriately. And right now it's available through pre-ordering at Amazon, Barnes & Noble, and Powell Books.
Okay. All right. Well, we'll get the links up to that up at our blog at stash.normal.org. It's potculturebook.com. We'll also, of course, always have the links to celebstoner.com, and you can find everything you need to know about celebrities and entertainment and the world of cannabis right there at celebstoner.com. Steve, thanks again for joining us here on the Daily Audio Stash.
You're very welcome, Russ.
Here at the Normal Daily Audio Stash, we work hard to change our nation's marijuana laws through education and discussion. But we also take the time to relax and unwind with an eclectic mix of pod-safe music from many independent artists. We look for music that speaks to the growing truth about cannabis, or music that speaks to broader themes of freedom, liberty, social justice, equality, and protest. To find out more about the artists and download the music you hear on this podcast, just log on to stash.normal.org. And if you'd like to get your music heard by the online cannabis community, just send us an email at stash@normal.org. Time for our musical break, and Cannabis Carry has the day off today, so I get to bring you some new material from Suburban Noise Records recording artist DGAF, which does not stand for Don't Got a Fatty. You can probably figure out what it does stand for. This is a hardcore, in-your-face, blunted, full-length recording from Suburban Noise's most notorious characters, Saint Dog, original frontman of the counterculture icons Cottonmouth Kings, Chucky Chuck from Subnoise Soldiers, and South Bay punk legend Gillies and the Cottonmouth Kings' own Daddy X join in the audio disruption. The album features production work by Daddy X and beatmaster Mike Kumagai. DGAF is not for the faint-hearted. It is a brutal, subsonic, all-out audio assault. This CD is the gasoline on the fire, pure heat, so lock up the women and children as DGAF terrorizes the music industry. Our breakthrough track is called Knuckle Up from the recently released album DGAF. For more information on DGAF, visit their website at www.og-dgaf.com or just check the links at the Stash blog at stash.normal.org. This is DGAF and Knuckle Up.
My space, please step back, cause I'm about to throw this punch to your chin and it's great to see it down.
Get him up, hit him with your best shot. Knuckle up, hit him with your best shot. Swing hard, hit him with your best shot. You still talking, I'ma hit you with my best shot. Get him up, hit him with your best shot. Knuckle up, hit him with your best shot.
pocket and I'm feeling swell. Fucked up and I'm down this hill.
Get him up, hit him with your best shot. Knuckle up, hit him with your best shot. Swing hard, hit him with your best shot. You still talking, I'ma hit you with my best shot. Get him up, hit him with your best shot. Knuckle up, hit him with your best shot. Swing hard, hit him with your best shot. You still talking, I'ma hit you with my best shot.
I'm giving knocks off, please take rocks off water. Give him up, fuck about props, so don't bother. Spit on your time, a dirty comeback line. Spit the rest of your time throwing up gang signs.
Float like a butterfly, sting like a bee. By the time you try to swing, I'm landing like three. Flat up on your back while you're drinking my pee. You should have thought it through before you fucked with me.
Get him walking, bottles flying through the night. Bloody knuckles cause I'm down to fight. The gap on my face swinging left and right. Best believe I'm fighting for my life. It's do or die, who's down to ride? Everybody else just stay inside. It's one on one, don't need no gun. Knuckle up, punk and let's have some fun.
Get him up, hit him with your best shot. Knuckle up, hit him with your best shot.
Individuals.
Yeah.
And we just want y'all to know that weed helps, you know what I'm saying? So I just want y'all to stop messing with the people who need it to live. It's helping people out there with cancer, AIDS, you know what I'm saying? So y'all gotta let it be, man. Legalize this.
This is Mason Tavert, and you're listening to the Normal Audio Stash.
We're pleased to have you here on the Daily Audio Stash. A good friend of mine, and a fellow member of the board of Oregon Normal, Melody Silverwolf, who joins us here in studio. Welcome to the show, Melody.
I'm very pleased to be here.
What I wanted to bring you here for is that you also work at the state's largest medical marijuana clinic, the Hemp and Cannabis Foundation here in Portland, where you're a patient services representative. And there's recently been a lot of political happenings here in Oregon regarding medical marijuana, and specifically the people that are fighting for the so-called drug-free workplace. And this was reported in the News Review, and I'll just read this paragraph and then get you to comment a little bit on this. And the paragraph goes like this. Originally designed for the seriously ill, Harmon, who's one of these representatives, said Oregon's Medical Marijuana Act has now allowed 16,000 people, many of whom are in the workplace, to become cardholders for medical marijuana. And they also mentioned that only 451 of those cardholders are cancer patients. This puts Harmon's company, Hoffman Construction, and any other company that employs medical marijuana cardholders in non-compliance with the federal government's Drug-Free Workplace Act. So what I wanted to talk about here is this push by the employers in Oregon and the representative lobbies for those employers who are trying to make it harder or impossible for medical marijuana patients to seek or have gainful employment. What do you think about, you know, tactics like this and the way that he's bringing up that 451 cancer patients? What are they trying to do here?
Well, I think that Mr. Harm is continuing in the grand tradition, him and his colleagues have continued over the years to use these tactics. And I think that they realize that their logical arguments are few and far between. And so they resort to tactics like this to make their point. He's recently made a number of remarks, Mr. Harmon has, which contain inaccuracies far and wide. And so, you know, playing fast and loose with the truth doesn't really bother him, apparently. And so he accumulates information and sort of adjusts it to suit, you know, his purposes, and never mind whether it's accurate or not.
And the feeling I get with when they say something like, well, there's 16,000 cardholders, as if that's a problem, as if that's abuse of a system. When you look at the Oregon Oscar database, the cancer database, there'd be that many cancer patients in Oregon alone that could qualify, much less talking about all the chronic pain and seizure disorders and epilepsy. I mean, your clinic sees, you know, hundreds of people a week, don't they?
Yes, we do. We have over 25,000 patients in our database, and we have also seen a number of patients for the adjoining state, Washington, as well. And most of the people who come to our clinic are qualified by virtue of suffering from chronic pain. But a significant number also suffer from things like seizure disorders and things like glaucoma and AIDS and hepatitis C, conditions like that. A number of a significant proportion of the people we see are veterans also.
Oh, yes.
Of every war. But of course, the veterans of the Vietnam era are all aging now, and many of them are succumbing to some of the injuries they sustained in the service, as well as, you know, years of hard living. And so, yes, we see people from all walks of life, all ages. Our patients range from people who are under 18 who are qualified to use medical marijuana as long as their parents agree, and of course they have to have a qualifying medical condition. We have patients in their 80s as well, and everywhere in between.
So, as far as characterizing this as abuse with 16,000 patients, how many of the patients are new patients compared to the ratio of maybe the returning patients, people that are reauthorizing a card after a year?
Well, I did see that statistics from the Oregon Medical Marijuana Program just recently that the number of renewing patients and the number of new patients applying to the program are about equal.
Okay.
7,000 and some for each figure, roughly. So, of course, you have a lot of attrition from people moving out of state. Perhaps, unfortunately, people may die of their diseases, especially in the case of cancer or something serious like that. But other people perhaps, you know, may decide that they're no longer interested in using cannabis for whatever reason. But, yes, the program continues to grow. And as you said, if you really looked at the number of people that would be eligible to apply for this, it's enormous, far greater than the number of people that are currently enrolled.
Yeah, and I think a lot of their tactic here when they say, well, there's 16,000 patients, but only 451 of them are cancer patients, a continuous reoccurring theme here in Oregon, and I imagine in the other medical marijuana states, is this idea that, oh, you fooled us. We thought it was just going to be for dying people that were, you know, 2 months to live. We didn't know that there'd be pain patients going on and on and on and on.
Well, you know, I don't think I was around during the campaign for Measure 67 here in Oregon. I don't remember any rhetoric like that. If they choose to believe that that's what we were saying, then that's, you know, that's their version of history. But that wasn't what proponents of the medical marijuana law were putting out. They were saying, look, here are these people who have serious illnesses, and cannabis, you know, lessens their symptoms, gives them relief. We need to show some compassion. That's what the voters voted for, and that's exactly what they got. Oregon is a model for most of the programs around the nation. A large percentage of the states who have followed in our footsteps and created medical marijuana laws have copied our program to one degree or another. This is the most successful program in the nation. We have very little harassment from the federal authorities here. We have good protection in the way of the card from the state, and a strong activist presence so that we can really keep the lawmakers on their toes. You know, we've resisted a number of attempts to change our law in a way that would be negative to patients, and I think that this is a huge success story. And that's the real reason why Mr. Harmon and his colleagues are worried. Of course, you know, I've heard it said that the world of politics is driven by lawyers, and I think that's true to some degree. A lot of the employers' concern is driven by the advice of their attorneys that you could be sued, that you could lose this contract. And this has not come to pass. All the things that they're predicting that are going to happen, they're going to lose contracts, they're going to there's going to be huge workplace accidents. That just hasn't happened. And, you know, the sky is not falling, and we're not willing to have the law change to favor the employers in such a way that would endanger our ability even to make a living and support ourselves.
Yeah, I think there's a lot of that, the fear of the lawsuit. And the other thing, maybe I'm just cynical and suffer from conspiracy theory, but I've always thought that maybe one of the reasons that they're so opposed to the idea of the legal registered medical marijuana patient in the workplace is because that just completely tumbles down the drug testing house of cards. How can you convince me, the healthy person who uses marijuana, that I'm a workplace safety risk when the person working next to me is a medical marijuana card holder and they're working just fine, they're as productive as anybody else, they don't call in sick or have any problems on the job? It makes it really hard to convince me now that you need to be drug testing me.
Well, you know, the way I look at it, drug testing is it's a hoax perpetrated by those who benefit from it, the industry that benefits from it, and law enforcement officers that benefit from it, et cetera, on not only the person who has to take the test, but the employer as well. What does the employer gain from drug testing? It's expensive. And oftentimes, if you really follow a policy of terminating people who test positive, you lose some of your best employees. It doesn't really gain employers anything, and many employers didn't do it before the federal government mandated that to have a federal contract, you had to have a so-called drug-free workplace. Of course, we all know that the drug testing programs that are in place don't really test for a lot of drugs that really do endanger people in the workplace, and of course, single out people who are medical marijuana patients or recreational marijuana smokers. So I don't really think it benefits the employer any more than it benefits the testee, and I think that drug testing is something that really needs to be eliminated from our pre-employment landscape. We're the only nation in the world that allows pre-employment drug testing. Wow. Now, what does that say?
Yeah, and it reminds me of the recent Washington Supreme Court decision just north of us where they said they couldn't randomly drug test student athletes. Washington's Constitution has a specific privacy provision. And one of the justices, in her opinion, and I'll just paraphrase, said, if you can't tell you have a drug problem, then there's no reason to randomly test. And if you can tell you have a drug problem, then you'll know who to test.
You know, that's exactly, I'll use a very similar words, actually, to testify in front of the legislature in January. Because years ago, when I worked for the state of California, I was charged, along with my coworker, with creating a drug and alcohol treatment protocol for the department we work for the employees. And so we went and talked to the heads of all these leading treatment organizations at the time. This was back in the 70s. They all told us the same thing. If an employee has a serious enough drug or alcohol problem to be something that needs to be dealt with at the workplace, it will be painfully obvious. Mm-hmm. You do not need any kind of special training or test to tell when someone needs to be talked to about their drug or alcohol abuse. It will be painfully obvious to the supervisor.
Yep.
Nothing has changed. I don't think people have changed since the 1970s. So,
good management is going
exactly
to take care of that problem. It's a ridiculous system. Now, one last thing here with the medical marijuana situation. All these employers are, you know, talking about the potential of workplace harm and absenteeism and accidents. The Oregon data show that all of those data points have declined. But I just want to hear it from, you know, an activist. Exactly how many medical marijuana patients have been implicated in workplace safety incidences since the 1998 law was passed?
Well, Russ, that would be zero.
Zero. Thank you very much. This has been Melody Silverwolf joining us here at the Daily Audio Stash. She works at the THCF Clinic, the largest medical marijuana clinic in Portland, Oregon, with locations all around the western states, California, Washington, Hawaii, Colorado, and Nevada?
Soon to be Nevada, yes. And Colorado, yes.
And you can get more information for them at thc-foundation.org. And also, of course, Melody is a board member with Oregon Normal, along with myself. So, full disclosure.
That's right. And proud to be so. And I'm also a co-founder of Oregon Normal, which I'm very proud to say.
That's right, co-founder. Thank you for mentioning that. So, thanks for joining us here on the Stash.
Thanks for having me.
We'll be right back.
Thank you for downloading the Normal Daily Audio Stash, the growing truth about cannabis. We are produced by the National Organization for the Reform of Marijuana Laws in Washington, D.C. Our executive producer is Alan St. Pierre. Our deputy director is Paul Armentano. Our webmaster is Brian Judy. And web production is provided by Red Aphid Interactive Media. As always, you can catch up on the latest information about marijuana at www.norml.org. And you can interact and download from our Audio Stash blog at stash.normal.org. For everyone here at Normal, I'm your host, Radical Russ Belville, hoping all your harvests are bountiful and your encounters with law enforcement are non-existent. We leave you with today's cannabis quote from William Randolph Hearst, newspaper tycoon, from 1936. Quote, "Was it marijuana, the new Mexican drug, that nerved the murderous arm of Clara Phillips when she hammered out her victim's life in Los Angeles? 3/4 of the crimes of violence in this country are committed by dope slaves. That is a matter of cold record," end quote. Wow, that reefer madness, it still continues some 70-plus years later. Well, I'm Radical Russ. Stay tuned for tomorrow's Weekend Music Stash. Have yourself a great weekend, and take care of each other.